We're all WIPs, works in progress.
Okay, I was like, what's that?
Not WAP, WIP.
Some people are WAP. And I'm all for you.
Hello, I'm Akshi.
And I'm Shayna, and you're listening to Unpacking the Eerie. Over the course of our friendship, we quickly learned that we had very specific overlapping interests in true crime, the occult,
conspiracy theories, and other unknowns, and also
intergenerational and historical trauma,
social, racial, gender, and economic justice, psychology, humor,
and obviously lots of podcasts. After many conversations, we thought the intersections of all of these things would be prime content for a podcast we've always wanted but have never found. This is that podcast. Before we get started, we want to offer our usual content warning. This episode will contain mentions of anti-Asian racism and of extreme violence, including sexual violence and torture.
Hello.
Hello, everyone. It's episode 10.
Yay.
Which is so cool because it's really been, we said this in the last episode already, but it's cool. It's episode 10.
Yeah, still feeling cool.
Yeah, proud of us.
Also, we have an Instagram live up if you weren't there. It's on our Instagram at Unpacking the Eerie if you want to go check it out after the fact.
We do
updates on multiple cases that we covered.
Gary Ridgway's case. We also covered updates on the Slender Man case.
Elisa, we went over the Vanishing at the Cecil Hotel docuseries. And
The Night Queen Stalker, Mary, a Netflix series as well. We also went over new things we learned from that. And we also just shared our thoughts on both the docuseries on Netflix. Mm-hmm. Some short updates on the Queen Mary, too.
Yeah, they're creating a three-part horror film series.
Oh, I'm so excited for that. And it would be very cool if they did the same with the Titanic. I would be so down for that. The right people could do it well.
Yeah, and it's time for a refresh.
New stories, please.
Absolutely. The stories that we shared, I had never heard before. Mm-hmm. We should share their stories.
Yeah.
Not we. Somebody.
Somebody.
Somebody do it.
I don't need to be involved. I'll watch it when it comes out and have my critical thoughts.
Right. We'll come back with the critical thoughts. On brand.
Yep.
Okay. As per usual, we're starting with our Patreon shout outs. So big thanks to Allie and to Jake for being new patrons.
And we're also sharing that one of our patron tiers is the Ghosty Giver. And basically with that tier, 50% of like the proceeds that we earn from that patron tier, we will be donating to an organization or a cause related to topics that we have covered in the podcast. So in our second episode, An Asshole Aquarius, you heard us talk about Gary Ridgway, aka the Green River Killer, who is a piece of poop, more than a piece of poop, at the bottom of the trash can. But in that episode, we dug into how white privilege, misogyny, and violence against women and girls in the sex trade allowed Gary River.
I see what your brain did. It makes sense.
Allowed Gary River. It's like Green River Killer. There's a lot of G's and R's in there.
Yeah, yeah.
Allowed Gary, the Green River Killer, to get away with murdering sex workers and homeless girls for over 20 years down the Pacific Northwest. Most of these murders took place in the south end of Seattle. And for this reason, this winter, so from December 2020 to March, 50% of the Ghosty Giver money will be given to POC Sex Workers Outreach Project in Seattle. They are a BIPOC-led chapter of the National Sex Workers Outreach Project, who emerged as a response to the lack of support for specifically Black and other sex workers of color in the Seattle area. Right now, their main focus is direct outreach to street-based sex workers via the Greenlight Project. A long-term goal of this project is to empower BIPOC in the sex trade by diffusing power from central leadership and putting it back in the hands of the community. So we're going to post receipts of that, but that's who our beneficiary for the past 3 months are going to be. I'm going to pass over to Shayna, and she's going to tell you a little bit about our next beneficiary. That will be the donations that we raise from now until June.
Yes. Okay. Well, we changed up our beneficiary list because of what happened recently in Atlanta. If folks have not heard, I have a hard time believing people have not heard, but I also understand avoiding the news because it's been horrible, taking breaks from it. So in Atlanta, Georgia, on March 16th, there were 8 people killed at 3 massage parlors / spas, and 6 out of those 8 people were Asian women. Our next beneficiary will be the families of the victims of these shootings. I also wanted to just share that, where to even begin? A lot's been coming up for me. I feel like I've been talking about how exoticization and fetishization of Asian women is dangerous. It's not just like some punchline that people throw around, like with yellow fever and shit. It's like really dangerous and results in sexual violence and murder. And it goes unacknowledged because no one likes to name race when Asian people are involved, because I think it disrupts this idea that we're in a post-racial society and the model minority myth. And I just like really want people to sit with that. This is just like one example, and it's really shitty that something so extreme had to happen for people to be like, oh shit, this is an issue. This is a fucking hate crime. I also want to like talk about how both things can be true at the same time. How like I noticed that anytime there is an Asian-owned business, Asian-owned massage parlor, everyone's like, oh, sex work is happening there. And I think that's really sexist, racist, and classist to just imply that, to assume that all Asian-owned massage parlors provide sexual services. And also at the same time, sex work is work, and I honor the labor and the livelihoods of these women, whether their sex work was done for survival or choice or both. All of these assumptions have deep roots in imperialism and colonization, and they reverberate over history. I also want to share, there's a Instagrammer, Mimi, who me and Akshi love, and they said, my heart hurts immensely this morning. I was at a massage parlor 2 days ago. I was taken care of by Asian women who are just trying to make a livable wage. This is a conversation about racism, and it's also a conversation about gender and class. Working class Asian women are perceived as easy targets and are constantly subjected to sexual assault and violence. I'm seeing conflicting information speculating the white supremacist intentions, and it seems fucking clear to me. They also said, be critical with your response to anti-Asian hate. Encouraging more policing will not make undocumented / migrant communities be safer. Police have historically raided, killed, and violated Asian women in massage parlors. Read about Yang Song. I will also post some organizations to support who don't engage with organizing to increase policing. And the last thing they posted was an urge to white followers. I urge you to learn about what is going on and the origins of xenophobia, the history of comfort women, the violence that is embedded in the history of colonization and war. Really consider your positioning within all of this. Consider the ways you may have fetishized Asian people, especially Asian women, and how you turn Asian culture into an Orientalist exotic monolith. If you have access to intergenerational wealth, send it to mutual aid funds and support local Asian family businesses. So, wanted to share that, connecting to our Ghosty Giver beneficiary money. And if you don't want to become a Ghosty Giver, which is totally understandable, if $20 a month is kind of a lot, you can send it to our Cash App. It's Unpack the Eerie. And I think there's a place where you can put a comment. And if you just want to like indicate that you want to make a donation, then we'll add it to the poll that we're going to send at the end of June.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have anything to add?
I mean, I've just been feeling pretty fucked up since this happened. It's really been messing with my head because shootings normally do, but yeah, this one hit very close to home, and it makes me really sad because, you know, I used to outreach with Asian women in Singapore who worked at massage parlors, and some of them were sex workers, some of them weren't, but it just makes me really sad that, like, these women's lives were taken away from them for no reason at all. And it's really just disgusting to me that white men think that they have some kind of entitlement like this, you know, and then justify it by saying that they're mentally ill.
Or having a bad day.
Yeah, like, what the fuck? You're having a bad day, so you go buy a gun and shoot up a bunch of people.
And, like, make other people pay for your gross fetish?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah. The ripple effects of this, like, one incident is going to be so much. I mean, like, we talk about on this podcast how, like, even one person, like, in a family or community experiencing this kind of violence or dying this way, like, has such profound impacts on people in their community. So, like, I really feel for any friends or family members of the individuals that were lost.
There is something, too, like, people, like, visibilizing the violence. Hate crimes happen all the time. They're just not not acknowledged as hate crimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know. I want people to look at the, like, big picture patterns and notice also the every small detail that could lead up to something like this. Mm-hmm.
Like, honestly, call your friends out, because I'm sure small things are happening that are going unnoticed. And I just really wish that men would fucking call their friends out for saying and doing fucked up shit and not just staying silent. That is one small thing you can do.
Right. I'm really tired of the whole, like, but I'm a good guy thing.
But who are your friends, though?
Yeah, who are your friends? Hashtag not all men, but, like, what does that matter if you're not actively interrupting that? Because all women.
Yes. All.
Literally all non-cis men.
Yep.
Experience gross objectification and dehumanization in small and big ways. And fucking cis dudes don't do enough to interrupt it.
No, they don't.
Do better.
Do better. I was literally walking to my house from a friend's house who lives very close to me. And I was all bundled up, and these fratty boys are honking at me in their car. And I was just like, can you not? Like,
just trying to exist.
Yeah. I wish I could just go on a walk at night without being fearful that I'm going to get sexually assaulted or killed. You know? And that's very real. And I don't think that cis men realize that you have such privilege to just walk around.
Yeah, I honestly, the resentment I feel in my stomach when a man goes, yeah, I was on a walk in the middle of the night, how about fuck you?
Yeah, I feel so much resentment too, because I love going on walks.
Yeah, you're always trying to go outside.
Fucking sucks, man. I'm a very outdoorsy person. Trees are always trying to call me, come outside. And I want to go. I want to go communicate with the trees and the moon.
Men act like they don't know. They know. They know, because otherwise they wouldn't feel really weirdly protective over their female relatives or their girlfriends or whatever.
They know.
They fucking know. They fucking know. The first people I heard from in my life watch out for men. Men are pigs. Are from other men. Yes. Because they fucking know. So don't tell me you don't know.
Yeah.
I'm like pointing at the fucking mic.
don't tell me. Don't tell me you don't know. You know.
You know.
They know. They know.
Same thing with white people. You know.
Yes. You know.
You know. The things that white people will say to other white people when they're not in the presence of other people of color is disgusting.
Makes me so mad.
You fucking know.
You fucking know.
One time I went into a bathroom at my undergrad. I was doing a presentation, so it was post me being there. And I remember I went into, like, it was like one of those food courts bathrooms. And I was sitting, going pee, and I look on the wall, and someone had written, "White women don't let Asian women take your white men. Take them back." And I was like, oh my God.
That's so gross.
It's so gross. I'm like, first of all, you can have them.
Yes.
Keep them. Keep them. Also, like, what kind of white supremacist shit is that?
Yeah.
That is wild. And I was sitting there like, is this a common thing? Because I know, I've seen and felt the resentment from white women towards Asian women because they think that they're a threat because they know that people fetishize them.
Vomit.
Yeah.
That's really gross.
I've seen that shit.
I'm actually reading this book right now. I think it's called Everything I Never Told You. It's by Celeste Ng. Have you heard of it?
I recognize the author name, but I don't think
What else did she write? Oh, she wrote Little Fires Everywhere, but this was her first book, Everything I Never Told You, and it is rough to be reading.
Damn, are you doing that now?
Yeah, it's fiction, but the family that's in the book, the father is Chinese American and his wife's white, but they got married in like the 50s. Mm. And it's set in the 80s, and even then it's like the amount of like racism that the father and their kids experience is fucking wild, because they live in like small suburban town in like the Midwest. And the father in the book, he is a like history professor that it's like he has a PhD in like knowing about cowboys because he studied how to be American so much because he was so like isolated growing up in high school. He had no friends at all.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And you can see him projecting like onto his kids, like, this is how you make friends with white people, essentially, because they're the only non-white kids in their entire school. And it's very sad.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, that shit totally exists and no one acknowledges it.
Yeah.
I think especially on the coast.
And honestly, that's where the model minority myth even comes from, mm-hmm. because like Asian families have had to do all of these things to survive in racism, mm-hmm. and like build like really unhealthy relationships with perfectionism and success. Mm-hmm. That are then just like transmitted intergenerationally. It's really fucked up, you know?
It is really fucked up.
It's a stereotype that actually stems from white supremacy.
Absolutely. The model minority myth really does just serve white supremacy. It also puts a wedge between different communities.
Yes.
Because it is predicated on anti-blackness. Mm-hmm. It totally thwarts any opportunity to, you know, engage in solidarity efforts. Mm-hmm. And there's a total erasure of Black and Asian specific solidarity. Yep. Activism.
Which exists.
Yes. Like Yuri Kochiyama organized with Malcolm X. I think she was radicalized by Japanese internment. And she was there when he was murdered. And, you know, like there's so many stories like this that just kind of get washed over.
Yep.
Because it doesn't serve the dominant narrative.
Yep.
It's trash.
Trash. Super, super trash. Mm. Also, just the fact that, like, it is so common for white people to mix up Asian, Latino, and Indigenous folks.
Like, what the hell?
Like, stop.
Okay.
What is with your, like, fascination with, like, what people are, you know?
Yes.
It's gross. It is gross. Actually.
I have been mistaken for multiple things, including the things that you've listed.
I have also been mistaken for Latino and Middle Eastern.
People really don't know what the fuck they're looking
no,
at.
No, they don't. And then when they hear me speak, they're like, they lose it. They really are just like, Wayne, are you from New Jersey?
Your English is so good.
Your English is so good. Like, where are you actually from? Like,
oh, when I was, you got the voice down. You've been hearing this.
When I was in India, I was in this place. I'm not going to get into it, but I met this, like, freaking German girl who was with this girl who was from California. And they were like, where are you from? And I was like, I'm from Chennai, which is the city I was living in at the time. And then she was like, no, but, like, where are you actually from? And then I was just like, I'm from Chennai. And I grew up in Singapore, and I, like, have been to university in America.
Oh, that's why your English is so good.
And I was like, well, English is my first language, so that's why my English is so good. It's the first language I learned from my birth.
See? Colonization.
Yeah. And then this girl from California is like, oh, it makes sense why we have the same sounding accent. We did not sound the same. She had a different accent than me. And I was just like, okay. I don't know what to say.
They really walk away with shit not thinking that anything was wrong.
No.
What in the world?
Not thinking that you're just like, first of all, in my country, microaggressing the fuck out of me. Like, get out of here.
Right. Go back to your country. How about that?
Go back to your country and, like, quote, find yourself. Because I know, bitch, you came here to do that.
Man.
And then the German girl had a fucking Thai Buddhist tattoo on her body. And I was trying to be not judgmental and be like, let me just ask her about it in, like, a curious way. And I was like, so what does this mean to you? And she could not give me any more information further that it was in Thai and that it was a Buddhist tattoo. And I was like, word. So you know nothing about it. And you just put it on your body. Okay.
Wow. Yeah, people, like, do that shit yikes. All the time. Super yikes.
Yeah, like, out here really just constantly appropriating Eastern cultures and Indigenous cultures while at the same time just, like, being emotionally, verbally, and physically and sexually violent towards these communities.
Right.
I hate it.
They don't even see how disturbing it is. They're just like, well, I just thought it was cute. Okay.
I'm appreciating. You know nothing about it. That's not what appreciation is.
Yeah. You just got the opportunity to share more.
Yes.
Actually, this reminds me. I was drunk at a party, and I was in this room. This girl was in there, and she had a bindi on her head. And I was drunk, and I was like, oh, is that a bindi? And she was like, yeah. And I was like, oh, she interrupted me. And she was like, I know what you're going to say. I know people say it's, like, appropriating, but, like, you know, I just feel like I like it. It's cute, and I don't mean anything by it. And, like, I appreciate. And I was like, you knew. Like, I didn't even have to say anything.
Yeah. If you're going to be so defensive before anyone says anything.
I just asked an open question because I knew. She knew.
Why that is fucked up is that because in the 80s, there was a hate crime group in New Jersey called the fucking Dot Busters, who used to shoot up people who wore bindis and saris. That's why it really pisses me off when people just wear bindis for, oh, it looks cute. Actually, the reason why people wear bindis is because this is where your third eye chakra is. And it's to, like, it's for protection. You don't even know what the fuck you're doing. No. You know nothing.
Yeah.
Anyway,
so that's what reminds me of this person that had the tattoo, and you were like, tell me more about this tattoo.
There's so many people like that. See, like, Hinduism particularly, it's not a closed religion or a closed practice, but, like, there's a difference between, like, picking and choosing aspects of it for your aesthetics than, like, actually practicing it and, like, knowing about it and, like, you know, learning from, like, teachers who are from that culture. There is a difference between appropriation and appreciation, and there's a line somewhere. But I think you know for yourself whether which side of it you're on.
Yeah.
And like, if a ton of defensiveness is coming up, try to figure it out. Maybe pause on the wearing the bindis or whatever you're doing.
Yeah.
And interrogate that a little more before continuing.
Yeah, it's so wild to me too, because if someone was like, hey, did you know this thing has cultural
significance? Actually, I have a story of myself that I'm gonna say. I did not know that it like was appropriation and not okay for people who aren't from specific indigenous cultures to burn sage or Palo Santo. Mm-hmm. And I actually had previously bought Palo Santo before finding this out. And after I found it out, I stopped using it. And then I recently like just gifted it to my friend who's from an indigenous community.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I felt a lot of like guilt and shame about it. But then I was like, well, what do I do? Let me just give it to someone who actually can use it.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm not saying that we're all perfect and we know what to do. It's like, just have these conversations with yourself and, like, actually, like, change your behaviors when you learn new information.
Right.
Specifically from the communities whose practices and cultures you might have been previously engaging in, you know?
I feel that. I have some gifted Palo Santo in my house and I don't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
That is a solution. I also didn't know that about sage for the longest time.
Same.
And also, like, that's the thing. People are like, why people don't have culture? And it's true, they don't. Because when, you know, people immigrated here and they could assimilate into whiteness and abandon their culture, they did. So, like, you have a lineage come from somewhere, mm-hmm. from probably multiple European places that do have practices,
yes, they
that
have
do have
so
culture
many.
And food and religions and, you know, whatever. You could reclaim those things
for
if
yourself.
You want to find culture. You don't have to steal from other people who are already fucking marginalized
yeah.
due to your fucking ancestors.
Yeah, yeah.
Do better.
Do better. Do so much
better. These people are not listening to this podcast. I don't know what. Maybe someone will passively aggressive. Passive
send it
aggressively.
To someone.
Yes.
You should listen to just this excerpt.
Wow, I would appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah.
If that happened to you, I am not sorry. Do better.
Sorry. Not sorry.
Yeah, and we're all working on it.
We're all WIPs. Works in progress.
Okay, I was like, what's that?
Not WAP. WIP.
Some people are WAP. And I'm all for you.
If someone's listening to this podcast in, like, I don't know, 2040 or something, they're like, WAP. This is a very right now reference.
I mean, maybe it'll go down in history as, like,
a cultural phenomenon.
Yeah. Okay, so moving on. I'm glad that we had the tangent because now I'm not feeling so heavy because I really was feeling on the verge of tears.
Yes, me too. I'm glad we had the tangent.
Anyway. Okay.
Moving on to something completely different.
Yes, moving on to something completely different. Also, really gruesome. Full disclaimer, we're going to do our usual content warning, but I want an extra content warning because this episode is so gruesome. I'm not sure it's for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very gruesome. I mean, I don't even know because I think Shayna got most of the gruesome research. I upper level know about it. I will also add it happened a long time ago. So gruesome and happened a long time ago, but probably not for everyone. If you're not into the gore,
then yeah,
you might want to skip.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you warnings when it's coming up so you can prepare yourself. But,
or fast forward.
Yeah, but I was reading stuff and I was like, whoa. I did get kind of queasy and I feel like gore is not a bit, for some reason, I'm not super phased by gore. Gore doesn't like.
I am pretty phased by it. I don't like it.
Okay.
I will watch things that are gory if I know that they have a good plot, but I sometimes have to close my eyes during gory scenes.
I don't know why. You would think I'd have more issues with it, but here I am. But this did phase me. I'm phased.
I am phased by this.
I am phased by the gore in this. So we're talking about what's noted to be the first real, quote-unquote, female serial killer. And I put it in quotes because sources say that it was like the first person who, or first woman who was noted to kill specifically for like sadistic, sexual, hedonistic lust instead of political or personal power.
And first person who's maybe there's records of too.
Right, right. Yeah. Like it's a notable person. So there might be other wild ass people who were horrific. You know, so she's known to be the first. Her actions resulted in the nickname Blood Countess, and she is said to be the a source of inspiration for Bram Stoker's Dracula. Some sources say that she was like the entire inspiration, and they just give credit to Vlad the Impaler because he's a man.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, sources are very mixed, so take
both of them are fucked up humans. I'm sure at some point we'll cover Vlad.
Oh, fuck. You know, maybe when we need a break from, like, the recent stuff,
yeah,
we could go with
go
Vlad.
Back to the distant past gore.
Yikes. Okay. She's most famous for the legend that she bathed in the blood of adolescent girls to keep herself youthful. And also...
Wild.
She's said to have killed at least 600 victims, even though she wasn't convicted as such, noting her as the Guinness World Record for most prolific female murderer. If you haven't guessed already, we're talking about Elizabeth fucking Bathory. And apparently, of the time, like, she's active in, like, the 1600s, and they said that Gilles de Rais is the only documented serial killing predecessor, who was a French aristocrat put to death in 1440 for the torture, murder, and subsequent necrophilia of hundreds of boys.
Oh, man.
Horrifying.
Horrifying.
What was going on with you, Gilles?
I don't know.
Maybe we'll check it out.
Yeah.
But before we get into the bloodlust, I'm going to tell you about her childhood. Because, of course, I'm asking, what the fuck happened to you, Elizabeth?
Clearly something.
Clearly something. So she was born August 7th, a Leo.
A Leo?
Mm-hmm.
A Leo also. It's like the middle.
Yeah. A Leo.
Yeah.
August 7th.
Yeah.
1560. She was born in Nyírbátor. I'm not saying that right, but it's in Hungary.
Hungarian.
She was born into prominent Protestant nobility who resided in the eastern parts of the Holy Roman Empire. She is the daughter of Baron George the Sixth Bathory and Baroness Anna Bathory. She descended from multiple noble lineages, including the King of Poland and the Prince of Transylvania among her relatives. So she's a notable bitch.
Yeah.
She's born into some powerful families. Her uncle, Stephen, was the
Stephen.
Stephen.
Stephen. That doesn't sound like a name from like the 1600s.
It doesn't. Is it Stephen?
Maybe, but still.
Still. Stephen Bathory was King of Poland, and she was raised at the family castle in Exed, Hungary. I don't know if I'm saying that right either. And her bloodline was known for generational inbreeding, like cousins marrying cousins, siblings marrying siblings. And she is not early on in this, like,
inbreeding.
Pattern of inbreeding. Yeah, like, for centuries, these families have been just marrying each other. So,
yeah, and it was, like, really common in that time period,
you know,
as well, especially with the nobility, royalty, whatever. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it makes me think, like, you know, we're supposed to have genetic variability, and the medieval times, especially in this particular area, was so horrific. I'm just like, what do generations of inbreeding do to your families? Like, are you more prone to, like, because, like, wow, the torture.
Yeah,
was
your brains
just,
must be fucked up.
What does it do to your brain? You're not supposed to do that. Ugh. Anyway, I don't know. But historian Raymond McNally says that the constant intermarriage among the few Hungarian noble families evidently caused the blood to run a bit thin. One of Elizabeth's uncles was reputedly addicted to rituals and worship in honor of Satan, and her... We're back with the Satan.
What's with these Satan worshippers?
I don't know, but like... I mean, just throughout time,
yeah.
People are like, well, it must be because they worship Satan.
Yeah.
And apparently her Aunt Clara enjoyed torturing servants, and Elizabeth's brother, Stephen, was a drunkard. Another Stephen, a Stephen? I don't know.
Whatever.
Was a drunkard and apparently a lecher.
What does a lecher mean? Like he creeped on women? Is that what it means?
I always just hear it in like, I honestly don't, it's, I think it's not a word that I use very often or like hear very often yeah. anymore, but I feel like it usually refers to people who are like belligerent drunks.
Okay, okay, yes.
Who like are.
Being gross.
Being gross.
Okay, okay.
In more than one way.
Seems like her family is not doing well.
Her family's not doing well. And he also said that many members of Elizabeth's family complained in their private letters of symptoms which showed signs of evident epilepsy, madness, and other psychological disturbances. Quote unquote madness. As,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
They said that, yeah, Elizabeth suffered from severe epileptic seizures.
Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm. And these are some conspiracies. I don't know. There's so many details that were added after the fact, so I don't know.
And it's from the 1600s.
Yeah, they could have just it makes for a scary legend.
Right.
But a popular conspiracy is that her seizures were treated by rubbing blood of a non-sufferer onto her lips using a piece of their skull, thus igniting her insatiable bloodthirst, this article says.
Wow.
And also they note that epilepsy was broadly used at the time to describe like a lot of different mental health issues. Mm. So it's hard to tell where one starts and one ends.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they also say that she was caught torturing animals at a young age.
Wow.
So
There it is.
The patterns are there. Multiple articles specifically said that Clara, her aunt, was a bi witch, which I mean.
Like bisexual?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, bisexual witch. But she also said to have murdered four husbands. And the legend says that she taught torture, sexual exploits, and encouraged the occult with Elizabeth. There's no evidence to support this, but it's a common part of the legend. Some sources said that she was a witness to intense cruelty as a child. Some guy was caught stealing and was sewn into a body of a horse.
Wait, say that again?
This guy was caught stealing and he was sewn into the body of a horse.
What the fuck?
Yeah. Some other sources say that she saw children being sewn into the body of a horse. Not sure what was what, but apparently that was a punishment she bared witness to. And she also saw servants being severely beaten. And it sounds like she was, like, totally chill with all of it. She was, like, introduced at such a young age. And this was, like, her
It normal. Was pretty normal at that time for nobility to
be really
do
abusive.
Shit like this. Yeah.
Yeah. And torturous.
Yes.
People were wild as fuck. And another part of the legend also suggests that she was aware of her inferiority as a girl from an early age. So people say, like, maybe this bore some kind of, like, resentment. I read some stuff about how child rearing was during this time generally, like, what was normal. And children were born and, like, often ignored until they survived the most dangerous ages of childhood because they were likely to die. And then they were put to
work
for the
family. What were the most dangerous ages?
Probably up to age 10.
Okay.
And then they could get them married off and it wouldn't be their problem anymore.
Mm-hmm. So basically, no child rearing.
No, they didn't have a childhood. Yeah. Parents kept, like, children at arm's length because the likelihood that they would die was so high. And so it kept them from getting too close to a child that might not live.
Mm.
And for noble children, less is known because their lives were more private. But it's suggested that children were often handed off to, like, a bunch of different nurses and nannies and tutors until they got married. So it was a hands-off upbringing, which makes so much sense to me also why it was such a brutal time and place. Because it makes me think of that study with, like, the monkey and, like, the wire mother.
I don't think I have heard of it.
It was a study by Harry Harlow. And basically, he studied maternal deprivation. And he had newborn baby monkeys bond with different things, and one was like a wire mother, and all of the monkeys that were raised by this wire mother who never responded, didn't nurture the monkey, you know, they started showing like really disturbing behavior. They would like stare blankly and circle in their cages. They engaged in self-mutilation. And then when they were reintroduced to the group, they didn't know how to interact with other monkeys. They often stayed separate, and some even died after refusing to eat. Yeah. So when I was reading about how it seemed like parents didn't really nurture their children, they just kind of like had their children exist and then passed around without any like affection or care, just makes me think of these wire monkeys. And I wonder if that contributes to like the hostility and like cruelty of so many people during this time. Yeah, and obviously strict discipline, corporal punishment by servants were acceptable. So if the parents were like, I don't want to deal with my kids, servants beat my child for me, they would do that. But all that being said, very little is known about her childhood, and very little can be proven with like evidence. It's just all hearsay, and it helps people try to shape the story. Like, why was she so horrible? Like, people want to make sense of that. And what is known is that she was raised in luxury and that she had a level of privilege that was denied to, like, most Hungarian citizens. She had access to, like, the best education. She knew multiple languages. She had access to a lot. So, which also reminds me of our Jack episode when we were learning about, like, malignant narcissism and how, like, the two things that are most often in people's childhoods who later develop narcissism is like extreme abuse and or like excessive coddling. So I feel like that's simultaneously happening for nobility. You got like excessive luxury,
right?
But you also have no real connection, care, nothing. And then also
a lot of emotional neglect.
Right. And on top of all of that, they were fucking marrying their cousins, so. So speaking of getting married at an early age, she was, at 11 years old, she was engaged to Count Ferenc Nadazdi.
How old is he?
He's 5 years older than her.
Okay, so they're both young.
It wasn't like, what's his name? Jacob Astor.
Yeah.
Not like that guy.
Both my great-grandmas got married when they were 12 and 14, so.
Damn. It's so weird.
The child marriage shit is not far back in history at all.
No.
I mean, it still happens today, actually.
Yeah, it does.
But it was very common till, like, what, 50 years ago?
Damn. That shit's wild as fuck.
Yeah, and I think my great-grandpa was, like, 16, so similar age difference.
Well, she was engaged to this dude. Ferenc, Count Ferenc. A member of another powerful Hungarian family, they moved to Castle Kacice, a wedding gift from the Nadazdi family. And some accounts of her life include her giving birth to a illegitimate child fathered by another dude before this. So I couldn't figure out if it was before she gets engaged, but it was definitely before she got married a few years later. Either way, she's incredibly young.
Yeah, she's like, what, 11?
Yeah, like, she's 11 during engagement. And then in between, I don't know, she gets married when she's 15. So between that 4 years, that's still so young. Makes me wonder, like, was she raped?
Yeah. I mean, that's the first thought that I had.
Yeah, like it feels like rape.
Yeah.
No source said that she gave birth to an illegitimate child, and like that's it, they leave it there. But I'm just like, what are the odds that she was raped? And I think they're pretty high.
I think they're pretty high.
Yeah. Some say that this was a peasant, and so that was like extra shameful. And she was sent away to a family castle, saying she had to go away because she was sick. But they also say that she gave birth to a daughter there and she was given away.
I mean, that's the same shit happens today as well. Like, I'm just thinking about in India when like women are raped and get pregnant, or like it's found out that they were raped, and then like all this shame from the entire community is put on top of them, and then there's like fucking honor killings and things like that of these women who have already experienced like such an intense trauma.
Yeah.
And all of the blame is put on them for like them being shameful because they all they did was exist to be a temptation. Ugh.
Right.
Vomit.
Ugh.
Like, we really think that gender equality has, like, come somewhere, but, like, the same shit still happens today, and people just, like, really ignore it.
Yeah. Right. Or, like, dismiss it as, yeah, like, some one-off wild
thing. Or dismiss it as it happens in X part of the world, it doesn't happen here.
Right.
Kind of thing. But it happens everywhere to different extents, as we talked about at the beginning of this episode, so.
Yeah.
Back to Bethy.
My brain's going on a tangent, so we'll just come back to Beth.
Come back to Beth.
To Bethy?
To Bethy.
Okay, we're back to Bethy. So Bethy, when she was 15 years old, she married Ferenc on May 8th, 1575. So long ago.
Yeah.
They had a fancy-ass wedding. There was like 4,500 people there. Wow. It was a three-day party.
Wow.
Yeah. The couple's first child was born 10 years after their marriage. So the first child was born in 1585. She gave birth to five children. Two died as infants. But two daughters and a son survived. So...
I wonder if she had miscarriages, too.
Probably. Yeah. I'm sure that was, like, super common.
Yeah.
And they were very powerful. They covered a lot of estates, a network of castles, manors, and palaces all over the Roman Empire, including some in Prague and Vienna as well. And in castles and manors, they had power over life and death of servants and peasants, sources say. Just like willy-nilly.
Yep.
Which is wild as fuck. What's his face? Ferenc. Ferenc was off to war a lot of the time, sometimes for years, fighting the Ottoman Turks, mm-hmm, because this was around the time the Long War was happening. It took place from 1593 to 1606.
Okay, that's and, a long time.
Apparently he was really brutal because he got the name the Black Knight of Hungary. The source I was, like, looking at said his brutalities shocked allies and terrified enemies. So I was like, all right. I'm sure he really got off on that
Ferenc.
Shit. Ferenc, wild as fuck. This war depleted the Hungarian economy, but apparently this wasn't felt on the family because they were still loaded as fuck.
Mm.
Turks threatened the castle. Kachice.
Yes. Perfect.
And then she spent time making sure the estates were secure, and I offered board to servants while he was away. They didn't spend a lot of time together, but apparently they bonded over love of violence.
That makes sense.
Classic. While they bonded over their love of violence, apparently he would roll up oiled paper and put it between servants' toes and lit it on fire. And
just torturous.
Very torturous. Before he parted, he gave Elizabeth clawed gloves to scratch the faces of disobedient servants.
Oh my god.
Apparently, while he was gone, she had many affairs. She was a very sexually motivated person, actually, like throughout her whole, like this whole history. There's a lot of like connections here, which also makes me wonder, like, what was she was exposed to as a child, and if she'd experienced violence.
Right.
Because hypersexuality is very common with people who've experienced sexual violence. And oftentimes, it's just like a way of reclaiming your body after someone has taken autonomy from you.
Totally.
Right? Like, you're choosing this.
Yes.
It's not going to undo anything, but maybe, like, you know, there's this sense of, like, trying to reclaim power, especially when we live in a society that not only, like, produces so many fucking rapists, but does nothing to, like, ensure that survivors get justice and healing after the fact.
Yeah.
There's so few avenues to kind of reclaim autonomy and power.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to disclose that participating in like burlesque was like a really healing experience for me. And I connected with my body in such a way I never had before. And like that whole experience of like, you know, having power over like what I'm showing, who I'm showing it to, and it feeling just really empowering was like amazing for me. And I still do it to this day because it feels really great for me. And it's not for whoever the fuck is watching. Yeah. It's for me. And so I totally get that. And yeah. It makes sense.
It does make
yeah,
sense.
Yeah, and I don't like it when hypersexuality is, like, framed as, like, oh, it's, like, a negative thing. Because it doesn't necessarily have to be.
It's you know? Just a response, yes. You know?
Let's stop placing value judgments on coping strategies.
Yeah, they just are.
You know? They are, and sometimes they're helpful, sometimes they're unhelpful.
Right.
Sometimes they're a mix of both.
Right. But, like, we don't get to determine that for
yeah,
people.
We don't get to determine what's good versus bad because different things work for different people at different times and situations.
Yeah, except in this case. This is terrible.
Yes. When we bring it back to Bethy, it's not so great.
I love that you're calling her Bethy. Bethy.
You've got to bring some lightness to the story.
It's true. You're doing some not so great things.
No. No, no,
Bethy's
really
not.
You're not really
handling
not.
Your trauma right.
No.
You're really being the worst.
She's being the worst. Like, and we haven't even got to the worst.
We haven't even
yet.
Got to the worst. Yeah. We are just barely beginning.
Yeah.
This is just like an amuse-bouche of torture. yes. Okay. So.
Back to Bethy.
Back to Bethy. Bethy was fucking around. Bethy was fucking lots of people. she really was out there. She was out there. Arguably, she had a whoop.
Probably did.
She probably did. She was really...
Certified freak.
She's a certified freak 7 days a week.
Oh, my God.
So, anyways, one of the sources said that she used to sleep with her manservants, called the manservants specifically, and apparently she would do this, like, kind of in public. She didn't give a fuck. So, yeah, she gave a fuck in so many ways.
Oh, wow, she really gives no fucks.
No, like, I mean, maybe that was her thing.
Yeah,
maybe
no
she,
fucks given.
Yeah, maybe that's a thing.
Yeah.
Like, having people see you.
Yeah, it's not the it's opposite not of voyeurism.
Exhibitionism.
Exhibitionism, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So maybe she was into that.
Yeah.
There is a... One, I couldn't find any info about this dude, but apparently his name is Ironhead Steve, and she had a lusty affair with him. On the gross incest side, some sources suggest that she was freaky with her Aunt Clara.
Oh, man. Was it her Aunt Clara was doing some weird shit, too, right?
Aunt Clara was murdering her husbands, and...
This family.
Yeah, she's pretty wild. Blessings. No.
Thank you.
No, blessings. Because they're tight? I don't know.
You can say, I don't care. Blessings is fine.
Okay. So in 1601, the household is joined by Anna Darvolia, who's a future accomplice. She ends up being, like, really instrumental in Bethy's torture escapades. People suggest that it's a catalyst for her more brutal behavior. Which is interesting because 1601 is also the same year her husband becomes unwell and developed paralysis in both his legs, and they don't know what he had.
Oh.
Anna is also rumored to be a witch. I just feel like every wicked woman's just like, you witch.
Yeah, yeah.
Unruly woman, you witch.
Yeah.
Everyone's
hysterical,
a witch.
You're a witch.
Just everyone's a
hypersexual,
witch.
Hypersexual, you're a witch.
Right, just
yeah.
Witch, witch. So, yeah. I don't know. I'm not sure. But some other writers also suggested they were lesbian lovers. I didn't find a lot of info on that at all.
Yeah, that is one.
But that is one. They were saying that that's why they were so close, that they were like...
This is Anna and Bethy.
Anna and Bethy.
Okay.
Yeah, Anna was like her closest confidant.
Okay.
And so some writers suggest maybe they were lovers.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Possible.
No way to
confirm that.
Totally possible. And Anna was also wild as fuck, so they got along well, I guess.
It's not out of the realm of possibility. They at least hooked up one time.
Totally. And then, so, girls begin disappearing around this time. Any of the questions raised by the families of the girls were squashed because the... Bathory Nadazdi family was so powerful. And
these are like girls from the village. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And pastors start to become suspicious because she keeps bringing them in to do funerals for servants who happen to keep dying from cholera. She thinks she's smooth as fuck. I mean, how many times?
Yeah.
So that happens. So she has to change up her shit a little bit. Shortly after he becomes unwell, her husband, he dies in 1604. And then Elizabeth begins her reputation for excessive cruelty. Like, people are beginning to know her for this. Mm. And increased accompanied pressures to take on the reins of the empire. Really, I think the stress is really getting to her. She's already the worst. She's now just, like, not handling stress well.
Grieving her husband.
Yeah, I don't think she gave a fuck about her husband.
Okay, all right, never mind.
But she probably doesn't dig that she has to take on all of these wild-ass estates.
Roles,
like, there's so many. Apparently, there were 400-plus servants under her rule, but killing staff probably didn't serve her, so she had to, like, look elsewhere. Mm. She begins luring girls from surrounding villages, in which people become also suspicious about. She tended to target peasant girls who were in her service, or after this, girls who were denied marriage from aristocratic families. Mm. So there's a lot of class implications here.
So many.
Like, she's targeting people that she feels like people won't notice gone or won't care as much about them being gone. Like, she considers them to be unimportant. And I think she also figures, like, I'm powerful. No one's going to believe these poor families when they come forward and are saying that I've done something to their children.
I'll silence them.
Yes. So some examples of the nonsense she was up to during this time. This is going to be horrible.
Heavy content warning.
Heavy, heavy content warning. I don't know how to cut it down more. Like, I'm sparing you details and it's still so horrible. So just fair warning. And these were compiled by witness survivor testimonies of over 300 people. Like, they were 300 testimonies against her and also her closest servants and confidants, because they also become accomplices in her torture. So she would beat them with whips, chains, metal bars. She kept servants chained up every night so tight that their hands turned blue.
Oh, my God.
And sometimes bled. She would beat them to the point where there was so much blood on the walls and the beds that they had to use ashes and cinders to soak it up. She beat a servant in Vienna so loudly that the neighbors, some monks, threw clay pots at the walls in protest.
Oh, my God.
These walls are like giant stone walls, I imagine.
Yeah.
She once strangled a servant to death with a silk scarf. She burned her servants with metal sticks, red-hot keys and coins, ironed the soles of their feet, and stuck burning rods. She sexually assaulted them with burning rods. And a lot of this was, like, very sexual in nature. Like, she would force people to, like, take off their clothes. She also, like, tortured them all over their bodies with needles and scissors, which was, I won't get into the details of because it's
gross.
Yeah. There's some nail bed stuff in there.
Ah!
Yeah, horrible. She also used knives, candles, and her own teeth to lacerate their fucking junk. Yes.
This lady
is wild as fuck. And she, there's stabbing. There's throwing boiling water on them, usually naked. She would force girls to run into the snow naked and pour freezing water on them.
Oh, my God.
She would haul people up in suspended barrels spiked inside. She was a big fan of Iron Maidens, which, if anybody doesn't know, it's a medieval torture device. It's shaped like a coffin, and it's got spikes inside so that when you close it, that happens.
Yeah.
She made servants sit on stinging nettles and then bathe with said stinging nettles.
Oh, my God.
During the bath, she would push the nettles into their shoulders and their...
Ah!
boobs.
I hate all this so much.
I know. It's horrible. She had them stand in tubs of ice water up to their necks until they died. She...
What the fuck is wrong with her? Oh, my God.
I don't know.
This is, like, really extreme.
Yeah, like, it's, like, the worst of the worst.
Yeah. She's, like, a combo of Richard and Linda.
She is a comp... She's totally a combo of Richard and Linda.
Yeah.
Give Richard and Linda a lot of power.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
She does give me Linda vibes.
Mm-hmm. Linda was doing the torturous stuff, but in a different way. With the starving.
Yeah, it was a lot less messy.
Yeah. More like mental control kind of shit, too.
Yeah, yeah. Different flavor.
Yeah.
Similar vibes.
Yeah.
Linda, we covered Linda in episode one.
Mm-hmm.
Tortured Whispers.
Yes.
Exquisite Corpses.
Yes.
If you want to check it out.
Yes. If you haven't yet.
Go back. She also smeared honey all over... a girl
no.
and left her outside
no.
to be bitten by ants, wasps, wasps, bees, and flies, which gives me a lot of Candyman vibes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. She kept them from eating for a week at a time, and if they got thirsty, made them drink their own urine. She engaged in forced cannibalism, including them to cook and eat their own flesh or make sausages and serve it to guests.
Oh, my gosh.
She heated up a cake to red-hot temperatures and made a servant eat it. She baked a magical poisonous cake in order to kill a rival magistrate, George Thurzo, who will come back.
Oh. Mm-hmm. But it didn't work, clearly.
I guess not.
Yeah.
She cast a magic spell to summon a cloud filled with...
Wait. What?
This is... These are pulled from, yes, these are accusations. This one didn't work either. Someone said that she cast a magic spell to summon a cloud filled with 90 cats to torment her enemies. So she's losing it.
This
lady is in a different world.
Oh my gosh.
She stuffed 5 servants' corpses underneath a bed and continued to feed them as if they were alive. Was another one.
She sounds like she's in a psychotic episode while engaging in this violence, too.
Oh, totally. I mean, I have to imagine that you can't engage in this kind of violence and have it not do something extreme to you.
Or, like, have some... Your brain already had to be a certain way to engage in this violence.
And
then you... Yeah, I guess you traumatize yourself over and over again every time you engage in it. And so it just...
Yeah. She really is... Getting really bizarre.
Yeah.
She also buried them in gardens, grain pits, orchards, and occasionally cemeteries, sometimes with rites, often without. Another source said that she would, like, throw them over the wall, hoping that they'd just be torn apart by dogs.
Oh, Lord.
I know. Most of the heavy lifting, though, was handed off to her accomplices, which one source called her torture squad. And that's just, like, the charges that were, like, against her... During her lifetime, after she died, some more details were added, including bathing in virgin's blood.
Which the classic maybe is true, maybe not true.
People suggest it's not true at all. That it was something that was like, that made for, a good legend.
That is the exact story they told in the Dark History Tour, so.
Yeah, it's what she's known for.
Yeah.
Also, like, the person who looked this up was like, this was a lie dreamed of centuries afterwards. Also would have been impossible due to coagulation, I checked. I was like, all right.
You can't actually bathe in people's blood.
You can't you can't actually do that.
Yeah.
So don't try it.
Yeah.
Some people suggested that she was syphilitic from centuries of inbreeding, which...
She could have also just had syphilis, right?
Yeah.
From
She could have
sex.
Just had syphilis in general.
There's no protection.
No. I don't know. But... I don't think that's impossible.
Yeah.
There was also, like, sexist claims that she was menopausal. I was like, okay, menopause does not make you a murderous bitch.
Yeah. Definitely not.
Yeah. And and then also with the blood bathing, some people suggest that the origin story of this was a chambermaid noted her hair was disheveled, and Elizabeth smacked her so hard that blood got on her face. And then she said that after she wiped the blood off, her skin felt rejuvenated, and that was what started the blood bathing. So this is the origin story that the legend says. Some stories say that they had to be virgins. Some say that they had to come from aristocracy. Again, it was debunked. It was not found in the court records at all. But some sources also suggest that maybe she was so covered in so much blood after torture that people thought she bathed in it.
Right.
But I don't know. It says that they also, the heavy lifting was done by accomplices. So take all the things with a grain of salt, because it was a long time ago.
Yeah.
I just wanted to note that, like we said, it's not uncommon. Torture was not uncommon at the time at all. I looked up torture devices in medieval times also, which I could share, and you can look up the details yourself. Just 10 of the most popular is the Judas chair. There was saw torture. There's what they called the pair of anguish, the breaking wheel, the iron chair, the head crusher, the rat crusher, the coffin torture, the breast ripper, and the knee splitter. And these are just 10 of the most, more notable ones. They're horrible, and oftentimes they were levied against people who were stealing or lying to people in power.
Poor people.
Poor people. And also they were used against women for being witches. They were used against people who were trying to get an abortion, or people that they just thought had an abortion, forced miscarriage, which could be, that's a really broad range of things that people can blame someone for. And also they persecuted people for being gay. So
violent tools of oppression.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that's that. I also read that she preferred fair-haired, fair-skinned, large-bosomed girls under the age of 18, which I thought was interesting that they noted. It just seems like she was targeting girls that embodied this standard of beauty of the Aryan
virgin.
Yes. Who is tempting because they had boobs.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just this really gross stereotype. It feels like she's targeting that. And it makes sense because her features were so different from that.
Mm-hmm.
She had really dark hair. She had dark eyes. Her features were... I just wonder if she felt threatened. And so her focus was on these girls.
Right.
So there's some white supremacy happening here. Anyways, Anna, her closest confidant, dies in 1609. And she's sad as fuck about it. And her debts begin to pile. Legend says that another accomplice, Erzsi Margarova, also believed to be a witch. See, everyone's a fucking witch. told her if she killed noble girls, her financial fortunes would improve. So she opened up a finishing school for young noble women. And previous accounts of murder of peasant women had been ignored. The claims in 1609 that she had slain women from noble families attracted a lot of attention. Go figure.
Yep.
Which is
classic.
Really classic. It's patterns we've been seeing in all the episodes.
Yeah. With Gary Ridgway.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And with Linda. These people were going to her for medical care that were desperate, and they only
started caring about it when the two sisters
rich ass sisters were there. So parallels.
Okay
Pass it on to you.
Well, I'm gonna kind of get in to how she got caught and that whole progression of events, and kind of starts off with this Lutheran reverend named Janos Pinikensus, and he had just taken charge of the church that was in the village of Kachitsa, which was the same village that Elizabeth's castle was near. And he states that, so basically I'm getting most of this information from this book called Female Serial Killers, How and Why Women Become Monsters. Most of my content comes from that source, so I just wanted to name that. So as he travels to this village, the closer he gets, the more stories he starts hearing about vampires and the torture of young women in the town. He also receives warnings of, like, evil deeds that were taking place in the castle. He even says that he felt the tension as he approached the town, and he noticed that the community seemed really sullen and frightened, and that there were very few young women that were, like, visibly present. So obviously, once he arrives, he meets Countess Bathory because he reports to her, and he felt an unusual tension among her servants and noticed very little life on the castle grounds. He arrives at the church and he finds notes in his predecessor's papers about the horrors that were occurring at the castle. One note said that he had recently, his predecessor had recently entombed 9 women in a single night in an underground crypt near the castle walls. Janos wanted to investigate this. He went up to the crypt and found 9 boxes stacked in the corner. They hadn't even been nailed shut properly, and he could smell the rotting corpses. Yep.
No.
He was shocked by the condition of the young women's bodies. They were mutilated, partly burned, caked in dry and dark-crusted blood. And, I mean, all of this makes sense with what we just heard from Shayna. He found human bite marks on the bodies, and he could tell that the bite marks were human, and that these women obviously did not die of natural causes.
Yeah.
He was very concerned and also scared by all of these discoveries that he had just made. He sent a messenger with a report to his superior in the provincial capital. However, the messenger returned shortly after saying he wasn't able to send the report as the reports had been confiscated by the Countess's guards on the way there. And so Janos gets freaked the fuck out at this point because he knows that she knows that he knows. And
the tension.
Yeah, and he tries to escape the town. But he was apprehended by a guard and ordered to return back to the church and just, like, do his normal duties, quote unquote.
Okay.
Fun fact, Reverend Janos was the inspiration for Jonathan Harker in Bram Stoker's Dracula, who is in the story, a realtor who journeys to Transylvania and finds himself imprisoned by a vampire. But Reverend Janos is the inspiration for that character. So Janos starts gathering details from the villagers. Apparently, his predecessor had been burying bodies of women with unexplained deaths for years, and he realized he wasn't the first to discover the horrors that Bethy was engaging in. So this is a quote from the book. By the time Reverend Janos finally managed to successfully smuggle out a letter to authorities, he was in the depths of traumatic paranoia. Records were found that he sent a letter to his superior saying that, this connects to what you said. They found a letter that he sent to his superior saying that Elizabeth had sent 6 invisible black cats and dogs to attack him.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he was able to see them, but people who were around him were not able to see them, so they thought that he was, like, seeing things, basically. Over the years, several complaints had been filed to the royal authorities about Elizabeth. Parents who sent their daughters to work at Elizabeth's castle found that their daughters were disappearing. Rumors about cruel torture of peasant girls who were employed by her were circulating for decades in this village.
Decades!
Yes, but the concerns were ignored until the disappearances of daughters from aristocrat families started happening while they were in Elizabeth's care. So the year before her arrest, 25 young women from, quote, declining minor noble families, is what they call them, were invited to stay at Elizabeth's castle. Several vanished during their stay, and when inquiring about them, Elizabeth said that one of the girls had murdered all the other girls for their jewels and then killed herself, which makes no sense. Why would she murder them for their jewels and then kill herself?
No, she just didn't think things through.
Yeah, she could not come up with good, like, alibis or stuff for this. The family of this girl asked for their daughter's body back so that they could give her a ceremony, and Elizabeth said no because suicide fatality had to be immediately buried in an unmarked, unconsecrated ground. And then other multiple deaths were explained away by outbreaks of disease, and they cited fear of epidemic, which is why they burned the bodies. So she's just giving, like, suspect answers, and people are not having it.
Yeah.
It's at this point where the Hungarian parliament, which was located in Budapest, that was currently under Turkish occupation, decides that they're going to investigate her. Mm. So on December 27, 1610, Count George Thurzo, who is Count Palatine and also Elizabeth's relative by marriage, is sent to go investigate, like, what's going on at, like, Kachitsa Castle. And he does this on orders from Hungarian King Matthias II. So the same day, one of Bethy's servants, a girl named Dorka, was caught stealing a pear. In response to this, she was stripped naked, beaten, tortured. She did not die from the beating, and so Elizabeth had one of her accomplices stab Dorka to death with a pair of scissors.
No.
Yeah. And then she was left in the courtyard to be disposed, quote, the next morning. So legend has it that Count Thurzo's raiding party arrived at around the same time that this happened, and they found Dorka's body when they entered the castle, and then when they searched more, they found even more bodies at the castle on the hill. And they were very shocked by all of this, and Elizabeth was locked in her castle, and four of her servants, three older women and one young man, were taken away to Bitka, which was Count Thurzo's seat of power, where they were questioned and charged. So the trial began January 2nd of 1611, and this was not Elizabeth's trial. This was the trial of the four accomplices who were accused of assisting with the torture and killing of hundreds of young women between 1585 and 1609. The estimate of how many women were killed was between 37 and 650, and they were also being charged with practicing witchcraft. An estimated 100 to 200 bodies were said to be removed from the castle by those who worked there. So who were these accomplices, and, like, what ended up happening to them after this trial? They were in Elizabeth's service from between 5 to 16 years, depending on which one of them. Ilona Jo was a wet nurse to all of Elizabeth's children, and she confessed to murder and named a total of 50 victims. Dorothea Senses, a longtime servant of Elizabeth, was reported as the, quote, cruelest of the accomplices. She is said to have enjoyed the tortures, and she also confessed and placed a lot of blame on Anna Durvlia, who was Elizabeth's friend that you mentioned earlier. Ilona and Dorothea were both burned at the stake after having their fingers ripped off with hot pincers.
Oh, my God. The justice system is the same. See?
Yep.
This was just the culture.
Yep.
Just the culture of horrible punishment. For what?
Man, yeah. Have you watched Game of Thrones?
Oh, yeah.
It reminds me of, like, Reek.
Oh, my God. Poor Reek.
Yeah. That whole storyline with that dude, and, like, so I hated that whole thing. I did not enjoy it.
No, it was horrible. It was horrible. Poor Theon.
Yeah.
I mean, Theon was a shithead.
Yes.
But he didn't have to do that.
No, Theon was a shithead, but, like, he did not deserve that.
He didn't have to do that.
Yeah.
Fucking Ramsay.
Oh, my God.
You know, sometimes I feel a vengeance fantasy, and I had vengeance towards Ramsay, and I was very satisfied, honestly.
Yes.
When Sansa did the thing. If you haven't seen Game of Thrones, I'll just not tell you what Sansa does.
But
she gets back.
She gets back at him.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't undo anything, but it sure is satisfying.
Side tangent, apparently they're coming out with two prequel shows to Game of Thrones on HBO.
Really?
I mean, expected.
I guess so,
it ended so unsatisfyingly that...
They really ended it poorly. I'm really mad about it. I was so into this
same.
Show.
I feel like I wasted so many years of my life. Anyways.
Anyway.
Another one of the accomplices was Janos Fiziko, the only male accomplice. He confessed that he brought Bathory, her victims, along with Ilona, and he wasn't actually involved in the torture process and was a teenager at the time of the arrest. Therefore, he was deemed, quote, less culpable, and he was not burned at the stake. He was instead beheaded.
Oh.
But his body was burned after being beheaded. So he wasn't burned alive.
Okay. So apparently being beheaded is a more humane death. Is that what they're saying?
Mm-hmm. Because he was less culpable.
Severe. Oh, man. Ugh.
And then the only one of the accomplices to escape execution was Caitlin Benexi, and she was responsible for getting rid of the bodies and cleaning up afterwards. And she was sentenced to life in prison. However, she was released after a few years and then kind of just disappeared, and people don't know what happened to her. During the trial, witness testimonies were collected from over 300 people, and skeletons and cadavers were also used as evidence. During the trial, some of the witnesses stated that Bethy was a cannibal and had sex with the devil, which, rumors, but, you know. The accomplices were actually questioned under duress using torturous methodology that was developed during the Inquisition. I'm going to just now share some testimonies that people shared about the Countess during the trial. So this wasn't even her trial. This was just the trial for the four accomplices. I'm going to get into a trial that happens that was specifically for her after this.
Okay.
So this is a quote from one of the accomplices. The Countess stuck needles into girls. She pinched the girls in their face and in other places. I'm not even going to say this next part. A lot of this stuff is what Shayna has already said. The curious thing is, like, while they're giving these testimonies, they use terms like the Countess as well as her ladyship. So they still, like, hold this, like, respect for her. Or maybe it's just something that's expected. That's just the way that they're supposed to be speaking of her because she's nobility.
Right.
It also says she often had to change her shirt. She also had the bloodied stone pavement washed. There was even an instance where she just only used her hands to, like, scratch someone's face, maybe using those gloves that her husband gifted her. Yeah, a lot of this is, like, very aggressive, so I'm not gonna go into it. But it did come out during the trial that Elizabeth was doing all of this prior to the death of her husband, and unsurprisingly, Count Ferenc was aware of what she was doing and participated on occasion.
Oh, of course.
So
there they are, bonding over violence.
Quote from the trial. At Sarver during summer, his lordship, Count Ferenc Nadasdi, had a young girl undressed. While his lordship looked on with his own eyes, the girl was then covered with honey and made to stand throughout a day and night. So this girl actually collapsed a couple times out of unconsciousness. And he taught Elizabeth that in such cases, one must place pieces of paper dipped in oil in between the toes and set them on fire so that they would wake up from their unconsciousness.
Oh, there it is.
Yep. So there's a conspiracy that, you know, all of these things about Elizabeth were made up. And the reason why she was, like, persecuted this way was because King Matthias II owed Bathory's late husband a large debt. He didn't want to pay the debt. And some historians say that this may have fueled his move to incriminate her, since he was the one who ordered the investigation against her. So some context about that. After she was placed under house arrest, King Matthias continued to press to have her brought to trial for murder, each time being told it was worthless. His on-again, off-again war with King Gabor Bathory of Poland has been cited as the reason he focused on Elizabeth so much. Others claim that he targeted her because she was wealthy and land powerful. Finally, the Habsburg family owed the Nadasdi family a great deal of money for a loan given during the Turkish War, and some believe that Matthias sought to negate the need to pay this debt by having her removed from power. And some people say that witnesses provided testimony under duress from the king. However, I actually found this, like, 200-page thesis that this person who studies history wrote about this conspiracy and found that it was essentially false. She says, although she was indeed a powerful woman and owed a large amount of money from King Matthias II, an unmarried woman in a position of power was not a cause for fear among Hungarians. Poland and Hungary were more accepting of what was called a virago or a strong woman, and it was not only accepted but expected that noble women took control of their estates, especially in the absence of their husbands. The reason she was investigated was not because of a conspiracy, but because there was enough evidence of criminal activity against her that even her exalted position did not protect her. Mm-hmm. Even outside of Hungary, the single woman who had power was not as unusual or shocking as popular belief had argued. France, England, Scotland, and Spain, as well as provinces in Italy, were all ruled by widows or single women, either directly as in England or as regents in France. Women rulers and nobles who ruled with the intention of preserving or expanding family power for their children were praised for their efforts without risking their femininity. So this is kind of a conspiracy that's not based on the context of the times. In addition, the debt was actually passed on to her son after she was arrested, so the debt was not negated. Mm-hmm. And to accomplish the full negation of his debt, the entire Bathory and the senior Nadasdi branch would have had to be removed from their noble standing. So the reason why Elizabeth was not tried initially and why her accomplices were tried instead was because her family was really, really powerful, and the person doing the investigation into the case was part of her family, and he very intentionally chose who to charge and how to do the trial in a way that other members of her family and their, like, nobility and reputation would not be impacted as much. Which is fucked up, because her accomplices were put on trial, but she wasn't. And that, like, speaks to the classism that is present here. Because I'm sure that, maybe one of them, who it quotes to be, like, as one of the cruelest, was wanting to do those things. But it does really not sound like Janos, that teenage boy, was engaging in activities he actually wanted to. And he was under her, like, employ. So what is he supposed to do? He's either supposed to agree to helping, or he's going to be tortured himself, right? Because if she's torturing people for stealing pears, like, what is she going to do to, like, her servants who say no to her? So it's really fucked up that these four people were charged and killed in these really horrific ways just to kind of, like, save the reputation of her family. So a few days later, because trials in this period of time did not last very long. They were like a couple days, done. Mm-hmm. So a few days later, there was a lower court trial on January 7th. Mm-hmm. And this was the case against Elizabeth Bathory herself. And it was reviewed by a higher court later. And Count Thurzo testified during this trial. This trial was transcribed in Latin, while the trial of the four accomplices was transcribed in Hungarian for some reason. It was during this trial that a witness known as the Maiden Susanna testified that a register existed in Elizabeth's chest of drawers that had the names of over 650 people. Mm-hmm. She testified that while she was in Elizabeth's service, she witnessed the murder of 80 girls at least. So that's where the, like, legend of her murdering over 600 people comes from. Mm-hmm. This book was never found, but it's honestly unsurprising because her family was trying really hard to bury a lot of this stuff. So it's honestly pretty surprising the amount of information that we still have about this case today. Yeah. Elizabeth actually wanted to appear in court to defend herself, but her family blocked these attempts so that she wouldn't even be able to speak, because they just wanted it to, like, be done and over with so quickly. Mm-hmm. Count Thurzo was related by marriage to Elizabeth's family. He had the title of Lord Palatine, which meant that he had the king's judicial powers in his region. He chose to stage the trials in a way to make sure that Elizabeth's property and her debts remained payable to all her surviving relatives. Mm. All the court officials and jury members owed their allegiance to Count Thurzo. So we're seeing just, like, who is getting to decide how this goes.
Yeah.
And it is a member of the Bathory family, essentially. It's not an objective form of justice in any way. There was a plan in place to sentence her to life imprisonment, also known as in peripetuus carceribus, or perpetual incarceration.
Oh.
This is why Elizabeth wasn't even allowed to appear at the trial. If she was convicted for murder or witchcraft, her wealth and properties would have been seized by the Hungarian crown, and they were trying really hard to make sure that didn't happen.
Yeah.
Instead of a public execution like that faced by her accomplices, she was walled into a room at the castle. None of the ruling families wanted the details released to the public and also didn't want her estates confiscated by the crown or to have the crown's debts to the family canceled. Mm-hmm. Although King Matthias had attempts to hold retrials so that she could be condemned to death, the agreement that Thurzo had with Elizabeth's family was upheld. When Elizabeth attempted to challenge Thurzo's authority in all of this, he said to her, "You, Elizabeth, are like a wild animal. You are in the last months of your life. You do not deserve to breathe the air on earth, nor to see the light of the Lord. You shall disappear from this world and shall never reappear in it again. The shadows will envelop you, and you will find time to repent your bestial life. I condemn you, Lady of Kachitsa, to a lifelong imprisonment in your own castle." Yep. He was like...
He was like, the power of Christ compels
yes.
you. Goodbye.
Yep. Yep.
I guess that magical poisonous cake really just...
Right. Yeah. He was pissed about it, clearly.
Yeah.
Right after this trial happened and Elizabeth was sealed up in this castle, records were immediately sealed by her powerful family. There were no newspapers that reported on it. And the only thing that kind of was a indication that, like, justice had been done was that red gallows were erected near the castle to show the public that, like, something had been done. Like I said, she was shut up in a room in her castle. The windows were all walled up with bricks, and there were only a couple of small slits that were left open for ventilation and for the passing of food. So this was in 1611. On August 21st, 1614, at the age of 54, she was found dead in this room. She was initially buried in the church at Chakitsa on 25th November 1614, but the villagers complained about this because they were like, why the fuck is this lady being buried here? And so she was then moved to the family's crypt in Exid, where she was born. Once Bathory was legally dead, her crimes no longer harmed the family, and she could not be brought to trial again. This was exactly the agreement Thurzo had made with Paul Nadasdi and his brother-in-laws. Had she been found guilty, she would have been beheaded, and the whole family would have been implicated and lost their noble standing. Mm-hmm. Even if she had been acquitted, her children and grandchildren may never have recovered from the social stigma that followed. And Thurzo did all of this to protect his fellow nobles and family members. After she died, the family divided Elizabeth's property. The details of her crimes in the trial vanished from public record. Indictments, trial transcripts, and judgments were all hidden in closed archives, and all mention of her name in Hungary was prohibited for the next 100 years. All that was left was rumors of a blood-drinking female vampire circulating in the Transylvanian mountains. Some context that I wanted to give about this time before I move on to, like, whether you can visit this castle today is that this occurred at a point in history that is, like, a halfway point between the medieval world and the industrial world. And so, like, she is known as an aristocrat serial killer in the medieval world, whereas, like, Jack the Ripper ushered in a new age of kind of, like, the industrial serial killers mm-hmm. that occurred in, like, cities. Pre-industrial age, where most people lived in the countryside, it was pretty common to discipline one's servants to death. It was perceived as excessively cruel and impolite, but an aristocrat's prerogative. Nobody was overly concerned about it. And as we know, complaints from peasant families were ignored up until she started harming girls from aristocrat
Man,
families.
Rich people fucking suck. They've sucked forever.
Yep.
They've sucked forever. And they thrive on the marginalization of poor people.
Yeah. It is really fucked up that, like, all of her accomplices had to die in such undignified ways while she was allowed to remain in the castle due to her noble status, and then was, like, buried in her family's crypt and her family maintained all of their wealth and power and reputation after this happened.
Damn.
And if she hadn't started targeting noble girls, she probably would have just gotten away with it for the rest of her life.
You know, like, it's interesting, like, how bad did the violence have to be for people to notice? Because it sounds like rampant violence was just so common. And, like, not a pursuable offense. Just how things are. It's how you got to show people you're in charge. It's what it feels like.
Yep. Which is just messed up. Well, like, but it also, it makes sense because they needed to build this fear of, like, intense violence in the people. Because if the people actually organized together to, like, take them down,
they'd lose everything.
They would lose everything because they're such a small, they're actually a small minority of people compared to, like, communities living in the villages.
You know, this is very familiar right now.
Yeah.
This dynamic just reverberates like hundreds of years later.
But the like violence and like torturous nature of capitalism is so invisibilized.
Right.
Whereas it's very visible here.
Right. It's just shifted, evolved over time. Different mechanisms, same goal, same profit like, over
deserving,
people.
Profit over people, deserving versus undeserving.
Yeah.
It's all
no dying
still
with
present.
Dignity. Like in Titanic when they like only recovered the rich people's bodies.
Yep. And they freaking shut the doors on all of the people who were making the ship fucking run the whole time. They were the first people to die.
Right. They were essential workers. So many parallels.
Yep.
So many fucking parallels. Also, the solitary confinement thing that she had, I was like, that sounds like modern-day solitary confinement.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Exactly like it.
Oh, man.
I will say, though, when I went on this dark history tour, that definitely was just, like, embellished story about Elizabeth. They said when she was found dead, it seemed like she hadn't aged a day because of the blood shit that she was doing. So that's the legend. Anyways, to end on kind of something a little lighter, you can visit the Kachitsa Castle. It's located in what's Slovakia today, in the town of Kachitsa, located not far from the western Slovak town of Nové Mesto nad Váhom. I don't know if I'm saying that right. But anyway, there's car and train connections to most of Slovakia, to this town. It is quoted as being the picturesque ruins of a mysterious castle in the Carpathians. And it has panoramic views, great for hiking and photography. I looked at pictures of it. It looks very pretty. And it is like ruins of a castle. Like there's not much left of it. There's accommodation available in the village nearby and plenty of places to eat and stay. The entrance fee to the castle is very, very cheap, and it gives you access to the castle as well as the museum. It has previously been featured on Scariest Places on Earth, which is an ABC show, as well as Sci-Fi's Ghost Hunters International, obviously. I decided not to watch the episode because I'm kind of sick of watching Ghost Hunters.
They do the most.
They do the most, and I don't even, like, trust it.
No.
In terms of hauntings at the location, visitors describe feeling a sense of dread and evil while they're there. Locals maintain that the castle is haunted, and many believe that tormented souls haunt the area. People say that they've seen shadow figures as well as full-bodied apparitions of young girls crying. Some people have also said that they've seen the ghost of Elizabeth Bathory herself since she was imprisoned and died there. And sometimes she's described as being faceless.
Oh. Eerie.
So that's kind of like the ghosty stuff that I found out about Kachitsa Castle. It has over 3,000 reviews on Google. So, like, a ton of people have visited this place.
Damn.
A lot of people just say, very beautiful place, lots of history. It has 4.5 stars, so, like, wow. People are a fan of it. I think it's the views are killer, as you can see from these pictures. 'Cause, like, yeah, it's in Eastern Europe, which is really, really beautiful, and it's in the countryside. It's on top of a hill.
It's prime real estate.
Yes, exactly.
That's why the castle was a gift.
Yep. Exactly. So, totally a cool place to visit. And I will just end with the fact that Elizabeth Báthory, there's literally a Wikipedia page called Elizabeth Báthory in Popular Culture because she has been referenced in popular culture so many times.
She's living up her Leo dreams in the afterlife.
Yeah, she really is. Wow. She inspired numerous stories and fairy tales and folklore. She is the main antagonist in Bram Stoker's sequel to Dracula, Dracula the Undead, which was written by his great-grandnephew. Mm. An author named Rebecca Johns wrote a book called The Countess, which is a fictionalized account of Báthory's life. A ton of modern vampire literature and films are based on her. And tons of books, poems, comics, and plays have been written.
Damn, people are
about
obsessed
Elizabeth.
With this bitch.
Most recently, there's a musical called Báthory.
No.
That just came out.
A musical?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Cast in 2009. And there's like a Twitter page for this musical called Báthory the Musical.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'd check it out.
Yeah.
See what's going on.
Yeah, me and Shane are into musicals, so... fun fact, relating this back to Hotel Cecil, Lady Gaga's character in Hotel, American Horror Story Hotel, which is about the Cecil Hotel, is actually based, loosely based, on Elizabeth Báthory,
mm-hmm.
which is unsurprising since she's a vampire who, like, cuts people's throats with her sharp,
her sharp
claws.
Yeah.
There's been tons of movies about her from 1970 to today. Video games as well, toys. So there was a series of action figures that McFarlane Toys created that was called the Six Faces of Madness. And these six action figures were Jack the Ripper, Rasputin, Vlad the Impaler, and Báthory. Okay, I'm missing a couple, but those were a few people who were involved in this series of toys. So there's toys of her that you can buy. In this particular action figure, she's depicted as bathing in blood while there are impaled heads near her. I don't know who would buy this for their children.
I don't know.
I don't know. There have been tons of songs written about her, and obviously a ton of black metal and death metal bands have named themselves after her.
Of course.
So there's a Swedish black metal band, Báthory, Ohio's hardcore thrash band, Elizabeth Báthory, Dutch black metal band, Countess, and a few more that I'm not going to name that are from America, Germany, Mexico, and Colombia,
wow.
who are all, you know, inspired by Elizabeth.
Mm.
And, you know, that is all I got about her.
Wow.
She's a wild one.
She really is.
Hey, I heard you were a wild one.
Give everyone a show.
Yeah. But, like, you're right. She is really living up her Leo dreams.
She really
with
is.
The amount that people, amount of attention she's gotten.
Mm-hmm. You know what I was also thinking, like, when I was reading about how mostly it looks like male historians were trying to say that she didn't actually do it. It was all a lie, like a political ploy. I was like, is this just men being really
ego.
Uncomfortable with the idea that, like, a white woman could do such a thing?
Mm.
Like, it's, like, disrupting this idea of, like, the innocence
femininity.
Of white womanhood. Yeah. Especially, like, her being kind of, like, in a position of nobility.
Mm-hmm.
I just wonder about that. Because I think the same thing about Linda.
Yeah.
We were, like, looking at research, and they were, like, calling her a quack and, like,
yeah,
a fraud.
Yeah, yeah.
Not a serial killer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yikes.
Yep.
Well, on that note.
On that wonderful note.
I
will say, if you have the ability to, like, visit Eastern Europe, it is extremely beautiful and also very affordable compared to other parts of Europe. So definitely definitely check it out. It's been one of my favorite places to visit. And I definitely prefer it to, like, a lot of other places in Europe.
Okay. Yeah, I'll add to my list.
Yeah. Hungary, Slovakia, Croatia. Mm-hmm. Those are the... Well, I haven't been to Slovakia. I've been to Hungary and Croatia, but they're all next to each other. You can do a little road trip when the panty is over.
The panty. Okay. Well, thanks for listening. Hope you take care of yourself.
Yes.
Maybe get a palate cleanser for this.
Yeah, maybe watch some, like, Bob's Burgers or something light.
Yeah, whatever it is you do.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. See ya.
Thanks for listening and for supporting us. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Unpacking the Eerie, on Twitter at Unpack the Eerie, and on our website at www.unpackingtheeerie.com.
Yes, and special thanks to all of you who subscribe to our Patreon. As we've mentioned before, we do all the research for this, we edit, and we don't have any sponsorships or ads. So Patreon support is super helpful in just keeping this project sustainable, keeping the Buzzsprout subscription going, paying for the website, all the stuff. So thank you so much.
Sari, Liz, Clifton,
Jill, Victoria, and Lindsay,
Lauren, Vivian, Valerie,
Micheline, Montana, Katrina,
Raina, Allie, Jake,
Drithi, Daphne, and Katie,
Vern, Meredith H, and Vince,
to April, Aaron, and Ellen,
and to Brittany, Alyssa, and Meredith R.
Yay, thank you so much.
Thank you.